two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome to the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos with you today. Ton Bettis has taken the day off. We have Jerry Goodspeed with us, the director of the USU Botanical Center, and Sheridan Hansen, who is an assistant professor of horticulture at the USU Extension. We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Our next texter has a question about onion plants. They have onions planted from set. Some are flowering. Should these be trimmed or just pulled out because they won't grow anymore?
Yeah, if they're flowering, we're not going to get a bulb on them. So they'll take that energy that they would use to create a really nice bulb and they'll send it up to the flower. So we don't want to see them flowering in this first year. So just take those ones out. They're really not going to give you a nice big green or a nice big sized onion bulb. And then the other ones, continue to let those grow until they're about ready. So you see the top start to yellow and flop over, then you know your onions are ready to come out.
Next texter is saying that they've been infested with elm bugs. Any ideas on how to get rid of them?
Oh, yeah. We kind of covered this earlier, didn't we, Jerry? They're tough to get rid of. You can use perimeter sprays if they're, you know, coming into your home. You don't want them to come in through your windows and stuff like that. But when they're out in the environment, they're really tough to get rid of. You use a very general broad spectrum insecticide.
But it just kills those that are there that day. Tomorrow they can move in from...
All their cousins come.
Yeah.
Not good. Let's take a call from Tom in Provo. Good morning, Tom. How can we help you with your tomatoes this morning?
Is that Tom in Woodland Hills?
Tom, this says Provo. Just go ahead, Tom. What can we help you with this morning?
Yep. So I have eight tomato plants. They're each different varieties. They were good disease resistant, celebrity, better boy. I think I have a fungus. As they got about 18 inches tall, the leaves started to curl, and then the growth turned strange. I've been spraying weekly with Daconil, and that seems to have stopped it. But it is it in the soil? Will I have it every year? What do I do?
Well, did they discolor? Did the plants turn kind of yellow?
No.
Are they stunted? No.
Yes, they were stunted, but now they started to regrow after I sprayed them with Daconil. I've been spraying every week.
I would have to, this is kind of hard to diagnose over the radio. I would kind of have to see a photo so that I know exactly what we're looking at. There are some fungal problems. Some of them can persist in the soil, but we would see like whole plants wilting, things like that. So this is something that I really think you should send a photo into your local extension office and see if they can help really identify and pinpoint the problem so we know exactly what we're dealing with.
Okay, is the fruit safe to eat?
Yeah, I mean, if the fruit's formed and it's nice looking, it should be just fine to eat.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Thanks for your call this morning. Next texter is asking about tomatoes. They say their tomatoes are doing well. Foliage is robust and happy, but too bad no fruit developing. They have blossoms, a few. So they wonder what tips you would give them so they can start enjoying their BLTs soon.
So, that BLT in the summer, that's what you want. So
best.
When we see, so good. When we see plants that are big and leafy and green and there's not a lot of fruit on them, usually it means that we over-fertilized. So when we give a tomato nitrogen, we're telling it, we're basically passing it a note in class and saying, hey, I want you to do this. I want you to produce a lot of leafy green growth at the expense of fruit production. So next year when you grow, you want to cut back on the nitrogen. I usually with my tomatoes, I fertilize at the time of planting. And then if they're not really putting on enough growth, I will give them one more fertilization. Mm-hmm. And that is it for my tomatoes. But a lot of the times I can get away with just the one fertilization at planting.
So at this point, they just need to do nothing.
Yeah, they just need to do nothing. Quit fertilizing and, you know, take whatever fruit you get off of that plant. And the next year, get a really good game plan for not over fertilizing.
Okay, let's take a call from Stacy in West Haven. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning. I'd just like to, first of all, thank Jerry for making the show so fun today. He's just hysterical, and I love that. And especially to thank
He's easy to pick on, you know, Stacy. That's the thing.
You never know what's going to come out of his mouth.
And I love it. I'm the same way. And we need a sense of humor, especially, you know, when you're dealing with problems. Sometimes the only way to deal with it is with a grain of salt, the big helping of humor. So
I
appreciate that. And secondly, I would like to sincerely and deeply thank him for helping my husband. He's got Asperger's, and I know he's come in to your business many, many times asking the same questions over and over and over again. And there have been times I wanted to just let him have it. But you have always treated him with love and respect and patience, and that is an amazing trait for people in business when you've got so much going on. And I just wanted to thank you sincerely for that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Stacy. We appreciate your call this morning. So this is going to be a tough one, guys. So this next texter is Joseph, and he says he and his wife, they're young. They moved into a house a few years ago, focused all their energy on repairing the inside of the house and pretty much left the yard to do its own thing. They said they've had quite a few problems. They had somebody come in and spray weeds, but they've pretty much killed almost the entire lawn, and they want to know where to start to care for this lawn and make sure it becomes luscious and green. They want to know where you would start. They fear that, would it be just be better to just tear everything up and lay sod, or what would you suggest they do?
Well, for me, if there's any grass at all, I actually start to try to work with what I have. And so normally what I will do is, it sounds to me like there were a lot of weeds. When you started to control the weeds, it kind of looks now like there's not much out there. So I would wait till probably the middle of August to the end of August. I would go through it with, I would harrow it or do some way to loosen the soil, and then I would put down my good grass seed. And this is me. I'd rather do that than do sod, because then I know what the seed is. I know what I'm getting. If I put it down in September, get it to grow, come up in October, November, then it has all winter to establish its roots, and into the spring and the next year you should have a really nice lawn.
And that's the difference.
That's what I do.
That's the difference between you and me. I want instant gratification.
Okay, now,
and I want sod.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, both
so
work.
It
but
just,
if,
just depends, yeah, too, on the size of the yard.
Definitely.
I mean, it's
and
one thing when it's a, you know, a smaller yard, and definitely money comes into that. And it also depends
sure
on whether it's a hilly, you know, there's a slant or a slope to the yard, those kinds
there's
of things.
There's a lot of different factors in it, but, and you're welcome to do both. If you're going to do sod, what I would do is I would wipe everything out. I'd make sure that I spray it all out. I would till it up, put some organic matter into it, start fresh.
Yep.
And then lay the sod, and you can do that anytime. If you're like me, where I'm a little more patient, and don't
he just said I have no patience.
Okay, I call it like I see it.
So, Jerry, how do you feel about like hydro seeding?
That's fine. What that is you're just putting basically a mulch down with the seed, and if you can tell them what kind of seed you want and make sure that it's a good grass seed, a good lawn seed, I have no problem with that at all. But sometimes, you know, you're going to get what you pay for, and a lot of times I see really cheap advertising, and you get a cheap seed, and you don't have the lawn you like in the next couple, 2 or 3 years. So just make sure that it's a good quality seed.
I found that to be very true with turf. You get what you pay for.
Yeah, you do.
You do.
All right.
And that's kind of why I like to put down the seed, because I know what it is.
Yep.
So if you're patient, reseed if you're not patient, sod, as Sheridan suggested.
Yeah.
If you have the money.
If you have the money, it can be a lot more expensive. That's right. Very, very true.
Okay, we need to take a break. Sterling, when we come back, we'll take your call. You can still text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. We are in the final minutes, and if you could have just seen the mess of my tangled headphone cord, you'd know why there was a bit of a pause there. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Maria Chaleos, and this morning I am joined by Jerry Goodspeed and Sheridan Hansen, and we've been taking your calls and questions. Let's go to our next caller. This is Sterling in Salt Lake City, and good morning, Sterling. How can we help you this morning?
Well, I got three questions, if I can ask that many, but first one is about my pumpkins. When I first planted the pumpkin plant, it had two stalks coming out of the ground, which both sent out vines, and they went two different directions. The one, let's just call the one side the left side and the other side the right side. So the left side goes out, it starts a couple of pumpkins, and these are those Atlantic giant pumpkins. I've never had them grow anything huge, you know, like a 500-pounder, but they grow pretty good size ones, you know, like 20 inches in diameter.
Yep, for sure.
So anyways, the left side started pumpkins first, and things looked great there. And then all of a sudden, that side of the vine went yellow, and now it's virtually dead.
Okay.
And the other side, it seems to be going, you know, like normal, like it hasn't got any pumpkins on it, but it's got green leaves and stuff. So what happened there?
So I'm wondering, have you seen any squash bugs in the garden? So that can be a real problem.
You know, I'm not even sure what a squash bug is.
Okay. All right. So it's an insect that does attack pumpkins. They really like pumpkins. They're really attracted to them. And they will come in about this time of year. If you put some water at the base of the plant, you might see a few of these insects kind of come up off of that base, that stem at the base. They'll get up underneath the leaves. They'll lay a bronze orangey colored type egg in kind of a mass, and they will pierce and they'll suck the sap out of that plant, and it will cause a sudden wilt. So the plant will be doing fine, and then it will start to wilt a little bit, and then maybe the next 2 or 3 days the vine is completely gone, and it happens really fast. So my guess is that you may have a squash bug infestation in that area. So I would look for those.
All righty, I shall do that.
Okay.
Well, I've never had this happen before. I've grown these several years, you know, for several years, and I've never had this happen like this before. So
it was a secret from the squash bugs, and maybe they finally figured you out. They know where you're at. So there's some resistant varieties, different things that you can grow, but you won't be able to grow that pumpkin if you want to not treat with chemicals or do something about it. You'll have to grow something different. But if you want to treat it, you can hand remove the eggs. You can spray for insects, but they can be kind of tough to deal with.
Did you say that I could not grow it next year? Or,
well, if you don't want to treat the insects. So if you don't want to deal with the insects and you don't want to be treating them, then you won't be able to grow pumpkins, because now that they know where you are, they are going to come back every single year.
So in order to treat it, just getting them off the present leaves, they're still going to be in the ground somewhere, or?
Yes, they hide in the ground just at the base of the vine, the adults do. And then, you know, they'll lay eggs on the underside of the leaves. Those eggs will hatch, and you'll have nymphs under the leaves. You'll find really small little insects that are the immatures of the squash bugs. And you can remove the eggs by hand. You can squash the eggs. You can use duct tape and stick those to the eggs and on the leaves
Another
and remove
that.
Another use for duct tape. Who knew, right? And you just want to start. I know duct tape is great. You can use it for everything. You just want to start. If you can find those insects out there, you want to start working on them. If not, if you don't start taking care of them, then you know pumpkins are kind of off the table.
Oh. Well, I guess I'm going to have to get out there and start hunting these.
You have to work on that.
Yep, you got to work on it.
Okay. What about, I have, when I was a kid, my mother used to grow peonies, just the red ones. I'd never seen anything but a red one at that point. And then I got some that are, I'm not sure what they've done to them, but they're sort of a hybrid or something, and they grow a lot taller and put out a sort of a pink and white flower. And I know that they come in various colors now. But anyway, the ones that my mother had, they put up a vine that's short enough that when the blossom comes on, they don't fall over. But these others, the stem is so long that they're always continually falling over on the ground. Is there a way to change that behavior? I mean, make them grow a shorter vine if I, like, trim them or something? Does that...
No, you really can't make them shorter, but what you can do is add a plant support to them. So they make supports just for peonies. It's just a little wire loop. You can even just put a stake in the ground and put a string around it just to kind of help hold it up. But you can't really make the stems be shorter.
We've bred them so that the flowers are bigger, but when we do that, they become heavier.
And they flop. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right, Sterling.
I can't even remember what my...
We'll be back next week, Sterling. You can give us a call.
All right.
All right. Have a great weekend. We do have Ron and Lyndon, who was listening to our conversation about the iron problems with the silverleaf maples. And he has a tulip tree and says he has a similar problem. And what would you suggest for that? You're going to say,
oh boy,
don't plant a tulip tree.
Am I going to get in trouble?
Yes.
No, actually,
you and the trees today.
I love trees. And actually, I love a tulip tree, tulip poplar.
They're beautiful.
Very nice trees. And if they're getting a little bit of iron chlorosis, they're easier to treat. You're not going to use as much iron because they're a little more adaptable. They grow native on the East Coast where we have acidic soils and they don't have the problem with the iron. So I would recommend with the tulip tree, and you want to keep it, then what Sheridan had said earlier, apply that iron product. I like to apply it about the time I see the buds starting to swell a little bit, because that's when in the spring, because that's when I think that their roots are taking up the iron products and stuff. And that's when I'll apply it. I've got a couple trees at home that I apply a little bit to. Sometimes it helps, sometimes it doesn't. But it's not quite so critical with the tulip tree as it is with a silver maple or autumn blaze.
All right. Final caller of the morning. Let's go to Kathy in North Ogden. Good morning, Kathy. Kathy, are you there? Good morning. What is your question?
I have a lot of earwigs that are eating my vegetable garden. Is there anything I can do about that?
Yeah, so we talked about earwigs earlier. Earwigs are just abundant this year. There's oodles of them out there. So we talked about trapping. So you can get like a tuna can, or you can get a bowl, something like that. Bury it so that the top of that can, the open top, is flush with the soil. And then you'll want to put in just like a little bit of bacon grease or the tuna oil. Soy sauce works, beer works, and then you want to put in a little bit of vegetable oil as well. And you leave that out overnight, and the earwigs and some other insects will also be attracted to it. And you can come out in the morning and you can dump those and reset them for the next day. You can use rolled up paper. You can use rolled up cardboard out in the garden, and you just set these little paper rolls or cardboard rolls out, and the earwigs will go into them. And then you can come and get those in the morning and throw those out and put out a new one. The other option are things like chemicals, broad spectrum chemicals that are labeled for earwigs in vegetables. There's not a ton of them that are labeled for vegetable crops, but 7 or Carbaryl is one that is for vegetables.
Okay, so bacon grease or soy sauce or what else?
You can use some of the tuna fish oil. You want some vegetable oil in there. You could also use a little bit of beer. Jerry's laughing at me because I'm recommending beer on the radio. It's true. It works. They're really attracted to
it. Not to drink. It's to attract for those earwigs.
Well, I guess it depends on how bad the earwigs get.
The earwigs might drink it. So, but yeah. So you can use those products and you can make a nice little trap that will really attract them in the evening hours.
Take a bowl or something.
Yeah, or even just, I use like a tuna can or, just something out into the ground that you can bury flush so that they can just walk right into it from ground level.
You'll also get slugs in there.
You will.
Get other snails.
All kinds of fun.
Yep, you will.
All right.
Thanks for your call today. This next texter is talking about earwigs attacking their sycamore tree. They say the bark's coming off. They've read that they just go to that fresh wood to eat. But what would cause the bark to peel?
So first off, the earwigs aren't removing the bark normally.
Mm-hmm.
They're the secondary pest. In other words, they're showing up and you're going out there and looking at them. Why the bark comes off of a tree, that can be a couple of reasons. One of them is I normally look at the base of the tree and see if there's any damage down there. A lot of times we have a tendency to look right where the bark's peeling instead of where the damage is done, which is very typical at the base of the tree. The root system, I mean, it can be somebody hitting it with a mower, damaging it. It could be some root rots. It can be a number of things down below that cause some death. And then whatever is feeding that area on the tree is going to be dying back. And then the bark sloughs off.
Hmm.
So that's what I would first treat, is try to figure out why is the bark sloughing off. And the earwigs, as I say, mostly they're just there cleaning up the damage.
And they like to get in those tight little spaces behind
they
that peeling bark.
Yeah.
And it's kind of moist back there. They love those spots.
Of course.
Typically, they're not the ones removing the bark.
Okay. Yeah. So next texter has those creosote-coated railroad ties that you use for retaining walls. And they're wondering how dangerous they are if they want to grow vegetables nearby.
So it can be an issue. I mean, if they're really old.
These are really old. They're like 40 years old.
Okay, then they've probably leached out everything they're going to leach out. But if you have an opportunity to get rid of them and replace them with something in your edible areas, I tell people, you know, that's a great idea to get rid of them if you can. If not, and they're really old, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
I don't. Most plants don't take up creosote. The biggest problem you're going to run into is dust, the soil, making sure you're washing the product really good.
Yep.
All right. You guys, thank you so much for all of your help today. Thank you for giving Ton a much needed Saturday off.
Thanks for tolerating us.
And thank
you guys are great.
It's been really fun. Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless, and I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story, the struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.